We have entered a golden age of fandom. That's according to GLT's Psych Geeks, Scott Jordan and Eric Wesselman, both professors of psychology at Illinois State University. Wesselman says it's the abundance of entertainment choices and the technology that delivers them that gives us the opportunity to indulge in fan behavior. Jordan adds, fandom has come into its own, giving us a basic human need, a sense of belonging.
The reason that it's cool now is the same reason it was uncool 30 years ago, and that's normativity. 30 years ago, most people who were expressing fandom were expressing it in these sports types arenas where bodies are present, bodies are doing games, and so group of spectators that are observing. And that's a little different than being a fan of a TV show or being a fan of a book series. So there was no place where everybody went to watch TV together or everybody went to read Harry Potter together. But with the advent of the internet, now there are these places where people can go actually sort of quote unquote be with each other around the fan content. It's become normative because there's been a space for it now.
The internet is certainly a boon for the social aspect, but also for access to the object itself too. So these sort of niche things, movies and TV before the video recording. You know, you had to watch it at one time if you had access to it.
Welcome to the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. And then some of the early work on fandom that focused on Star Trek and Beauty and the Beast, the TV series and things like that. All those groups had these mail-in fanzines to get in touch with each other. And then they started like swapping fan videos. Now you can just stream whatever you want, whenever you want.
Now that there's a space for it, it's normative.
It's given us a sense of belonging.
Always.
Is fandom really about what we admire, or is it really about us?
Most theories and research on fandom, at their core, it's about identity. There's something in that object that resonates with you. You attach to it, you bring it into your self-concept, it helps give you meaning, maybe nostalgia if it was something that you connected when you were a kid. And then the social aspect of it is you find others to belong with, which is also part of identity, and it distinguishes you you and your group from others. So I like the Star Wars, I don't like the Star Trek, right? Even within Star Trek, you have people who call themselves Trekkies and you have people who call themselves Trekkers.
Yes.
And there's very clear boundaries.
I would argue that that's actually some of the appeal as well. It's not just what I like and who else likes it. It's also what we jointly dislike.
Mm.
And it's fun, right? It's a fun in-group, out-group space. So if you're a Trekker versus a Trekkie, you're going to have that conversation because that argument is actually bolstering your own identity, because part of your identity is that definition against some other group. In the sports world, these age-old rivalries, that's part of what attracts you to that team is who they're against.
I recently stumbled across some research where they've identified that portion of it they call anti-fans. Yeah, so there's
anti-fans
and anti-fans. And so I don't know if that's – I'm not quite sure. I've got to read more about it, but maybe it's sort of hipster-ish. Like I'm defined by what I don't like.
Oh, no.
No, but what I was so studied.
So why do some movies, some characters, some TV shows or book series give rise to some kind of a strong fandom while others do not?
Time and place and then life, of course. So different stories are going to strike you a different way at different points in your life. So, for example, Star Wars. If you were 16 when you saw Mark Hamill look off into the sky, you know what that meant. You know, looking at it 30-some years later, it doesn't mean the same thing. So the different characters that come into fandom mean different things for you at different points in your life.
Accessibility is also key.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you look at now with the internet, with streaming, we can get word of mouth out there so much quicker. That buzz can be built, can be recommended, and there you go. Now, actually, maybe we have too much of a problem now and that there's too many options.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful, but like my queue of shows and movies to watch is I'm never going to be able to watch them all before I die.
Man, I love your first world problems.
Well, this is true. I mean, let me be clear. It's a good problem to have.
I'm totally
with
you. I have that same list. Accessibility is totally the case, though. And I think the advantage of the internet is we've transcended the decision-making dynamics of a few people in a boardroom at a network who are going to say, no, don't even finish the first season of Firefly. It's not worth it. Now, these things can get a new life. because of things like Netflix, they can develop a fan base that they probably couldn't because just for the reasons you said, accessibility, if it's not there.
But isn't there a bit of a problem also? There's a darker side to that, a sense of fan entitlement that they can tweet all they want. They can go to the cons and raise a stink about
Lord.
Stuff. I mean, people were freaking out over the last season of Game of Thrones.
And
there were... The thing that really put the chill down my spine were the guys who took The Last Jedi and edited out all the women and put out a special edit of their own. That's what these Star Wars fans did. And so there's a sort of a darker side of the fans sort of like trying to take control of what's been created by other people, almost as if we're not having respect for the people who are the creators behind what we are fans of.
When this is part of your identity, lots of... things are part of our identity, which we may or may not agree with in someone else, right? And so individuals who we might identify as racist or sexist or whatever, right? You know, certain perspectives of their worldview are part of their identity, right? And so when we get a story, you know, that we connect to, whatever way, that's part of our expectations. And when the next installment of that story violates our expectations in some way, whether it's a way that's socially accepted or a way that's not, we respond in kind. So if I don't like a particular set of characters in a movie that violates my worldview for whatever reason, maybe I will try to make it what I want it to be, right? In a most extreme sense.
And these days you can. You can create fan fiction. Other people can read it and you can resonate in your dislike of the original text. I'm always defining the self in terms of borders, and borders are always about what you're not. So in that sense, we can call it a dark side, but for me, if you're in fandom, there's always gonna be an other. And that's part of what we're relishing in when we do that fandom work. So there are dark sides. People are experiencing text and textuality differently now, because now they can jointly create in ways that they just couldn't even 10 years ago. And if it is part of your identity, then you, and someone messes up the story that's part of your identity, just write it over. You get a few other people to read it to resonate with you, so you feel like that's, you know, who you are and part of who you are, but you can do that now.
Well, and what's interesting is that when you look at the research on fandom, right, there was a big focus on studying fans as participatory, right? So one of the first major scholars in this area was a professor named Henry Jenkins, who talked about textual poachers and participatory culture. These are the phrases that he created to talk about how, contrary to whatever existed at the time, the previous view was that fans were just passive. You know, they just sat there in front of their TV and they consumed the narrative like they were consuming potato chips, and that was it. And Jenkins and others came along and said, no, most of these fans are taking what they like of the text and they're working with it. They're making it part of their identity, part of the way they see the world, and then they're continuing to produce, right? So fan fiction was one of the examples that these fanzines, the early ways of connecting.
Cosplay.
Cosplay.
I've cosplayed once. I went to the Con of Thrones in Nashville in 2017.
Who did you cosplay as?
I was Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones.
Oh, really?
Prisoner Jaime. My sister and I cosplayed together. She was Bran of Tarth from the Bear Pit, who had the red dress, and my sister did makeup on her neck. It was stunning. She looked like she'd been slashed by a bear. During the con, they had a contest, and all the cosplayers got to walk out on the stage and just present themselves to the audience. Huge rounds of applause. My sister and I got on stage and acted out a small, just, you know, 3 seconds of the sketch. People went nuts, right? These are just little plays that we can all share, and doing the cosplay brings it down to an embodied level. It's no longer abstract. That's one of the things that contemporary fan fiction, sci-fi, fantasy misses out on, that sports always has. Sports always has bodies. People go play baseball. People go play football. But people don't go play Jaime Lannister. And they don't go play Cersei. Unless they go to a con and they dress up and they have fun.
So cosplay is sort of embodied fandom
exactly.
In these other domains. What I love about studying fandom is that I may not get it. Like, I don't get steampunk. I don't get sports the way that a person who's a fan of that does. But I just find it very, very life-affirming. I mean, like, if someone can find something that, you know, doesn't hurt anyone, right, that they find honest joy in, that helps give them meaning, or even if it's just, like, this positive feeling of living, go for it.
That's Eric Wesselman and Scott Jordan. Illinois State University professors of psychology, and GLT Psych Geeks. Regarding fandom, they see the future as more participatory, with virtual reality becoming increasingly important in the fan experience. I'm Laura Kennedy.